Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here on KLDB Club 1220. Kyle, you're still there?
I am still here.
You're on your marathon radio stint today?
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Kyle. You're a younger fellow, and I think this is a question that I want. I want to see if you and me can both answer this question. Can you remember your last five birthdays? What you did on your last five birthdays? Start back at 5 years, and do you recall what you did?
I can already say no. Partly because one of those would have been my 21st birthday.
Okay.
So
when you get past the 21st, when you get past the, you know, the driver's license birthday and
right.
the 21st birthday, they become a blur. The reason why I bring this up was with some people recently, and the question we all asked one another was, do you remember your last five birthdays? No one could remember the last five birthdays. I think I could remember what I did the year prior. I couldn't tell you where I was the preceding 4 years.
Yeah, I don't even remember what I did last year.
The reason is, we forget things so easily sometimes, and even people like me who I think have a pretty good, vivid memory of important things, we tend to forget, and things get... They go to the back of our memory bank. And if you see a picture at some point, or you hear a song, or if you, you know, see a piece of film or video, you might remember that. And part of the purpose of what PCMediaNow.com is and what I try to do is try to keep these memories relevant, good, bad, tragic, and otherwise. This last weekend, the Super Bowl went on. I'm not sure if you were watching that, Kyle. I actually tuned it in a bit. Pretty exciting game. In 1985... The Super Bowl took place January 20th, 1985. It was President Reagan had just been inaugurated for a second term. And in Minnesota, we had a tragedy. Galaxy Airlines Flight 203. Galaxy Airlines Flight 203 was a Lockheed L-188 Ultra 4-engine turboprop registration operating as a non-scheduled charter flight from Reno, Nevada to Minneapolis, Minnesota. People in Minneapolis went out to Reno to gamble, watch the game, have a good time. The flight took off from runway 16R at Reno Cannon International Airport, now Reno Tahoe International Airport, at 1:04 a.m. on January 21st, 1985. A short time later, the aircraft crashed about 1.5 miles from the end of the runway and burst into flames. It landed near a recreational vehicle dealership, and debris was scattered across U.S. Highway 395 and South Virginia Street. Of the 71 people aboard, only three survived the initial impact, but one of them died on January 29th and another on February 4th. I have the audio that played on Channel 5 News the actual day of the crash that last afternoon, and I want to play that right now. Oh, yes. Hold on 1 second. Here we go.
Now, from Minnesota's leading news station, Cindy Brucato, Stan Turner, Dennis Belkin, and Bob Bruce. This is Eyewitness News.
This morning in Nevada, a plane hit the ground with an impact that will be felt in Minnesota for years to come. A charter plane carrying as many as 75 people was on its way back to the Twin Cities. Shortly after takeoff, it crashed and only three people are reported to have survived. Good evening, everyone. This is the worst air disaster in the United States in the last 3 years, and it directly hits home. All across our state, families and friends of the victims are still reeling from the shock. That charter plane crashed about 3 o'clock this morning. That's our time. Since then, investigators have been on the scene in Nevada, and our Dave Andrews is there, live on the scene, via News Star 5. Dave?
Cindy, here at the scene of the crash, Nevada officials are being joined by investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board. Right now, they are going over the very grim task of still removing bodies from the scene. Many bodies were burned beyond recognition. Many have been taken off to a temporary mortuary about 4 miles from the scene. It's been a sight that words really can't describe here. Galaxy Airlines Flight 203 crashed just minutes after takeoff from Reno International Airport. The four-engine turbojet smashed into a commercial residential district about 2 miles south of the airport. Witnesses said they heard two explosions and saw a ball of fire. The plane literally disintegrated, sending debris over a quarter-mile area. The plane nearly missed an apartment complex. Many of the residents there were the first on the scene.
I noticed the plane trying to take off, and it just didn't seem like it got any altitude, and it just kept at the same height. And then it disappeared behind one of the buildings, and then the explosion, and it scattered across the street into that other field.
All his clothes were just, there's nothing left. There's parts hanging from his face and stuff, and he kept screaming, "Help me, help me." And then a lady came out and put a blanket around him, and we took him off.
Rescue efforts continued throughout the night. By daylight, it was confirmed that only three of the 72 people aboard had survived the crash. The investigation into the cause of this tragedy is underway. Seconds before the crash, the pilot radioed the control tower that the plane was vibrating, and he was going to return to the airport to land. That apparently was the last communication from the plane. And the very latest word we have is that 69 of the 72 passengers aboard have perished. Three people, two of them in very critical condition, are being treated. A 17-year-old boy from St. Paul miraculously apparently has survived this crash with very minor injuries. He was thrown from the airplane on collision, and eyewitnesses said that he landed on this highway several yards from where the plane crashed. Now, in a very few minutes, the federal and state people here say they will be holding a news briefing. They will be taking reporters onto the scene to give them more information. Right now, of course, the grim task of notifying families and trying to pick up the debris at the scene. Then the investigation will begin full scale to try to determine exactly what caused this crash. No clear indications at this point yet. Back to you, Stan and Cindy.
Dave, you are on the scene right now. Is there a great deal of commotion that goes on behind you that we can't see? It looks pretty calm from here.
There is. There are several hundred people standing here behind me, which you can't see in the camera. It obviously has drawn a lot of attention here in the city of Reno. Very tragic story.
All right, we will check.
It's news hours after the plane crashed. Let's take a break, Kyle. We'll come back. We actually have Bernie Grace, a former reporter for WTCN and KARE-TV. He was actually went to Reno not long after this tragedy happened. I'd like to speak to him about his experience covering this very tragic piece of Minnesota history, which I think sometimes does not get reported on or not does not. It's not a vivid memory in our memories, but it was a very memorable moment. Let's go back. We'll take a break here on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220.
This is Grant from the Tavern on Grand. They say if you're going to serve walleye Minnesotans, it's got to be good. That's why the Tavern on Grand is sometimes called Minnesota State Restaurant. We serve Minnesota State fish, the walleye. Tavern on Grand in St. Paul has made an art form out of walleye. Delicious, tender, flaky walleye that's offered in a variety of ways. Any way you order your walleye at the Tavern on Grand, it's guaranteed to be great. See for yourself why folks come back time and time again for the walleye and all the other tasty treats. For the Tavern on Grand, St. Paul at 656 Grand Avenue. Just half a block west of Dale Street.
We've been family owned since 1922, and we still believe that it all starts with you.
Since the day Arthur Redunds opened the doors to Stillwater Motors more than 93 years ago, the good people to know have built a tradition of the very best in service, pricing, and value. Visit Stillwater Motors today and test drive the 2015 Chevy Equinox. Efficiency, style, space, versatility, an IIHS top safety pick, and it's the first car in its class with available 4G LTE Wi-Fi. You get it all with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon. And for a limited time, you can lease the 2015 Chevy Equinox for just $199 a month, or save up to $4,500 off. See the good people to know today and choose from a huge selection of brand new 2015 Chevy Equinox. Stillwater Motors, Redunds family owned and operated since 1922, and located at Highway 36 and Stillwater Boulevard, right on the corner, right on the price, and online at stillwatermotors.com.
Stillwater Motors, good people to know.
Celebrate love. Italian style.
When the moon hits your eye like a...
On February 7th with the Minnesota Orchestra in That's Amore. Kick off your Valentine's Day with a musical journey to Italy featuring romantic songs from Puccini to Dean Martin. That's Amore with the Minnesota Orchestra. Saturday, February 7th at Orchestra Hall. Tickets at minnesotaorchestra.org or call 612-371-5656.
Earthwatch is brought to you by Michelob.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond back with our guest Bernie Grace. Bernie, welcome back to Flashback Twin Cities for your third time on our show.
Well, thanks for having me yet again.
Bernie, I was just talking to Kyle here, our producer, and he's a bit young to remember this event, but this was you know, in the context of Minnesota history, and you think about we had inauguration, we had Super Bowl, and we had this tragic plane crash, which really affected Minnesota more so than any other state at the time. This was a Minnesota charter flight to Reno.
Yeah.
Do you remember? You remember being, you know, on the bench and getting a call and saying, "Here's what happened."
Yes. Right within hours of it happening, I got a phone call from the station, and we were to take the first flight out in the morning, and we had two crews going, and you know, right away, you know, you grasp this is going to be a huge story. But I think when it really hit me is when we were flying in probably 8 in the morning, 9 in the morning, the morning after the plane crash. And as we're landing, of course, you're going over the debris, wreckage, and everything else. And that's when you see it from the air looking down, it took on just a whole new meaning. I mean, yes, you knew it was tragic. It was horrific. But when you saw it for your own eyes, and it didn't get any better when you got on the ground either.
This is 1 a.m. Nevada time. Would have been 3 o'clock our time. Do you remember getting that call? Was it early in the morning? Was it late? Was it the morning after?
It was in the middle of the night, and they said, you know, get here right away, and they were booking the first flight out. I don't know. I think we flew out about 6 or 7 in the morning at the latest.
You know, you land there, and there is a – we actually played some audio on Channel 5 we had. You land there, and it's, again, it's a media – it's nothing compared to what it would be today, but it's a media – frenzy down there. You have people here in Minnesota who did not know, who knew relatives that had gotten on that flight and not knowing any information. This is not a fast-moving, it was fast at the time, but we did not have the digital devices we have today to know who was on, when was on. And of course, from what I understand, and you can correct me if I'm incorrect, that the national, you know, the national federal regulators down there did not want to release any information until things were validated. So you had people here in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities, who had no idea about their family.
Yes, it was handled much differently back then, although they did hold nightly news conferences, the NTSB, and they said, we have this fact, we have that fact, and of course, to this day, they still don't draw any conclusions from those facts. They said the weather was this, and of course, the weather had nothing to do with this, and, you know, they went down through everything, ticking off all the boxes, but it was the way it was handled back then is so different than now. I can remember just from a news point of view, they had like one live truck, I guess it was, and it was from the ABC station, and our news director knew the news director at the ABC station, and I believe this is the way it went down. Maybe it was a CBS station, but I think it was the ABC station. And he kind of made a side deal. Can we, you know, use your truck? Well, you know, that's not done much nowadays, but they had a live truck. And then we ended up sharing that truck with CBS and CCO. And then every night we would flip a coin who would get the first 5 minutes on the news, and the other station would get the next 5. Well, you know, nowadays none of that would be heard of. But if you wanted a live shot, that's how it was done. And we managed to win the coin toss a few times. When it was most important, we'd be, you know, the lead from Reno. And so that's how it was covered. And it was, yes, much different than it would be today.
And this is one of those stories I can imagine, Bernie, that when you're there and you'd cover murders, you'd cover investigations, but this is a lot of people that had perished in one brief moment, which was supposed to have been a very, you know, happy moment. These are people that obviously went to Reno to have a lot of fun. They took an air jet to go out to gamble. This had to have been a very emotionally challenging story to do. And we've talked before. You've been to Poland. You've actually had, you know, situations where your own safety has been concerned. But you have 70 families right now that are glued to whatever means of communication they have. You have people asking questions. You're down there. You're trying to actually, you know, do your job. That had to be a very overwhelming situation.
Yes, and, you know, that was a big deal to send two news crews, and then they sent a couple of producers. I mean, you know, they realized what a huge story it was, and so we ended up, I think, even with three crews down there at a time, and yes. But, you know, I want to say this properly, But at the time, you know, there, because two of the victims died within a day or two, and so there was 71 that perished, you know the number's terrible. You know everything's horrific. But and when it really hit you is when the names, the list of the names started to come out, and I realized, well, I know that fella. He was a deputy sheriff for Hennepin County. I wasn't a, you know, a close friend to his, but I knew him through covering the Hennepin County Government Center, and I'd see him every day, and we'd say hi. And man, did that hit you in the face when you started looking down the list of the people who perished in that plane and said, what if that's the relative of this person? And, yeah, because as you say, 70 families were impacted. 71, you know, it was something.
I look at tragedies, for example, the 35W bridge here in Minneapolis when that went down, and I'm not by any means discounting one tragedy from the next, but this, to my knowledge, might be the most people that had perished in one incident. And this didn't happen in Minnesota, it happened in Reno, but this was a Minneapolis charter flight. This was Minneapolis people that went down to Reno. And I think when we, in context of history, and I, the reason why I brought this up today with Kyle was, this is one of those, I think, footnotes of history that I think is somewhat forgotten. I think this story, I think occasionally it'll pop up in a, this happened at this point, but this was a major issue. This was five days of straight news coverage, if not several months of follow-up investigations.
Yep. Yes, and of course, you know, I live in the winter months in Nevada. And I've been reading about it here, matter of fact, because they are observing the crash. We're in outside of Vegas, about an hour, but up in Reno, they've just dedicated a new plaque. Vandals hit the plaque of the park that they set aside to remember the victims. And, of course, they planted a tree to remember each victim. And now they have a new plaque and to the park. And you know, so it's still very fresh in the minds. I mean, people remember it, and they're, you got some ceremonies that have been going on up in Reno to remember this entire thing.
How many days were you down there, Bernie?
I think it was at least a good week. And then, of course, we ended up going back a couple of times. The NTSB, I don't know, it was several months later, held their investigation. And, man, that, I don't know how much you've talked about it, but before you put me on the air, but the conclusion that the National Transportation Safety Board came to in the collision was just so out there. You would not expect that was the case, but it was quite logical, the conclusion they came up to. And, of course, that was a compartment door under the wing where they fueled the plane was apparently left open, and when the plane took off, it began to shudder, and I don't know how it all went down, but it sounds like the pilot tried to correct, and the plane just stopped flying. I mean, and it came crashing down into a berm. I just didn't have the speed that it needed to keep flying. But, it came down to this door. There was just a little door that was left open that made the entire plane shudder.
We haven't discussed it yet, but actually I have it right here. It's the NTSB investigated the accident. The issued the following probable cause. The NTSB determines that the probable cause of this accident was the captain's failure to control the co-pilot's failure to monitor the flight path and airspeed of the aircraft. This breakdown in crew coordination followed the onset of unexpected vibration shortly after takeoff. Contributing to the accident was a failure of the ground handlers to properly close an air start access door, which led to the vibration.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? I mean, to reconstruct that entire thing, and of course, everybody figured right from the get-go, well, it's not weather. I mean, that's one of the first things you look at, is it the weather? But I guess it's a logical explanation how it happened after you have the investigation.
And then also, this is other footnote, you might probably know this. The aircraft had been chartered to transport U.S. presidential candidates John Glenn and Jesse Jackson periodically in 1983 and 1984. On one flight with Jackson and his entourage between Washington, D.C. and Dallas, Texas in May of 84, the aircraft shook, dropped, and pitched due to heavy turbulence, reportedly resulting in a stewardess screaming. The U.S. Secret Service asked the Federal Aviation Administration to examine the aircraft, but nothing was found. This aircraft had some issues to begin with. It is another tragic tale. It's one of those things where if you can always go in hindsight. If only the company had done this, if this had happened, and Galaxy Airlines ceased to exist not long after this.
Right. Yes. I don't know how much longer they were in business, but yeah, this was devastating them too, obviously.
What do you think? What in the context of your career, does this still come to mind every so often? I know you're in Nevada and you're seeing these things, but do these things do you shake them out for a couple of years and you think about it and it kind of brings it back to where you were, or does it always stay with you?
It always surfaces. I mean, if you have a plane crash, you think about Reno, and. You know, it was just, you've got to, as you arrive there, you know, and you're taken close, you know, every 4 or 5 hours, the investigators would take us right up to the scene to show how the investigators are working. Well, obviously, that's not a pleasant sight to see when you're that close. I'm not even sure if they would do that today. But back then, you know, they thought that the reporters should have an access. And, of course, I mean, access to the site very close, not, you know, a mile away. And, of course, everybody is cognizant of you want to be very tasteful in how you take your pictures and how you show things. But, yeah, we're right there. And it has a huge impact when you're that close to it. In fact, one firefighter, I can remember, walked over because it was a gambling junket, and there were all these burned $100 bills. And he showed them to us, and of course they were only about a fourth of the $100 bill. But that brings it home, you know, why were they in Reno, and it was a Super Bowl weekend, and everybody's having a great time, and this is the end, you know?
George Lamson Jr. was the only person to survive the 1985 Galaxy Airlines flight crash. This is just from USA Today. How do you say thank you for a second chance of life? That is a question that has followed George Lamson Jr. since the cold, clear Reno, Nevada morning of January 21st, 1985, the day he walked away from the burning wreckage of Galaxy Airlines Flight 203, and 70 others did not. And Mr. Lamson, he did not sustain very major injuries. There were three survivors of the initial crash, and he was the only one that walked away from it.
One of the survivors was his father.
You correct.
Know, he was burned badly, but yes.
There's a documentary actually right now called Soul Survivor, and CNN did this documentary, and it is based on that plane crash and a couple other tragic plane crashes in the United States. And if you've not seen it, anyone listening here has not seen it, check it out. But it's one of those things where I've watched some interviews with. And did you ever interview George Lamson Jr.?
Yes. I mean, in fact, George Lamson, I think it was only the second day after the crash, held a news conference. And because everybody, of course, wanted to see him, ask him questions. I mean, it was miraculous that somehow where the plane breaks apart and his seat is thrown onto the highway and he survives, where, you know, everybody else perishes except two people, and they died later from their burns, and one of them being his father. And, you know, and I talked to him at the station. He was in the station after that. And of course, now he's back in Reno. He says he feels closer to his dad by just being in Reno. I knew for a while, I believe he was a dealer at one of the casinos, or he was employed some way in Reno. But he's still there to this day now.
Yes, in fact, in this documentary, there's a trailer, which if anyone wants to go to USA Today, there's actually a link to the story, and I'll post on our Facebook page today, too. George Lamson does say that when he was in Reno with his father on the Super Bowl junket, that he told his dad, he was 17, he'd like to live in Reno someday, and which I think many would probably be surprised that he went through with that, considering this is what, you know, he lived through this. And there's so much burden, I think, and I'm not able to speak for him. I've not interviewed him. You have. But you were there as a reporter. He was there as someone, the only person that was on that entire plane that walked away from it, and with very little injury, and he lost his father. It's just got to be, I can't even imagine what goes through his mind. And we talk about how we as observers see it, you as a reporter sees it, how he's able to go through life and actually able to go back to the town that this happened in and live what seems to be a very productive, happy life.
Yes, but yes, it's so tragic. And I kind of think back to the day or day after when he held the news conference. You know, at the time, you know, how do you grasp something like that? I mean, he's relating facts. This happened. This is what I remember. I don't remember that. But, yes, I mean, you know, I'm sure looking back at it a week, month later, it's like it becomes more horrific, you know? where at the time you're kind of repeating the facts of the way you remember them because you're sitting in front of a lot of TV cameras and things. So, but I don't even know how he's dealt with it. I'm sure it's very difficult, but he has, and it's amazing that he's gone on and made something of his life. It'd be so difficult to do that, I would think.
I think it'd be very easy to kind of fall into a state of depression that takes with you your whole life. And, much like, people that have seen tragedies and wars, I think that, from your reporter, I'm a journalist here, we expect people to talk about their stories. And I think sometimes, even I need to do a gut check sometimes, that people don't want to talk about things that that conjure up very, terrible memories. And I think that I give him a lot of credit and for his courage to be able to speak on this documentary. It's done by a Chicago documentary film director. Again, if you haven't seen it, anyone listening here today, check it out. But again, it's can't even imagine what you were there, Bernie, and you were there and you saw everyone's faces. You saw people that were gathering and watching. I'm sure you talked to many family members who wanted to know what happened.
Well, that's right. And Tom, I've told you this before, but whenever there was a tragedy in Minneapolis or whatever, I would knock on the door, and the first thing I would tell the victim's family is, if you don't want me here, ask me to leave because I will leave. Because that's the worst, conversation you can have. And yet, 90% of the people would always say, no, I want you to come in. And to some degree, it's almost therapeutic to start talking to somebody and telling them, this loved one meant this to me. And, of course, it brings it home to the viewer and everybody else is, this person was a good person, and I want you to know about this. I don't want you just to know this person as a number,
Our guest today, Bernie Grace, former CARE TV reporter. Bernie, does that come from experience? I remember when 9/11 happened, and I watched coverage all day long. And I saw a report, and I think that everyone who was on the payroll of a news station or a radio station or a paper was out talking to people that day, especially in New York. And I remember someone putting a microphone up to someone's face and saying, I understand that you lost your parents. How do you feel? And I remember the reaction of the person that had asked that question, and it's something I can't repeat on the air. That comes from experience, I'm guessing, or does that come from actual having some, some human empathy for when you're doing your job?
You've got to have human empathy. And another great person who knew how to talk with people, and we're fabulous friends, Caroline Lowe from CCO.
Yes.
We covered the same stories over and over, year after year, here, there, and everywhere. In fact, I stop and see her in California when I go through there. And, it comes with experience, and, we're not a glossy tabloid. You have got to, respect people's, their lives and everything else, and you got to use compassion when you approach people. And if you do, you'll be rewarded because they'll sit there and they'll tell you what you want to know about the person that you might not know. And, so, yes, it's a delicate time, and I used to hate to make that phone call or knock on the door or whatever, but I met some fantastic people, I'll tell you.
Bernie, it's great. We love seeing your stories, and we have a library here on tcmedianow.com thanks to your generosity of providing some tapes. It's quite a career. You've gone from some of the highlights of the world to some of these tragedies, and I'm hoping you're enjoying your retirement out in Nevada. It's not too bad here today. It's about 30 degrees. We had some 30 below weather here earlier in the week, and I think we wanted to take, we all wanted to be where you were, but I'm hoping you're enjoying retirement.
Well, my son lives in St. Cloud, and he's kept me abreast of how really November sounds like it was your worst month, and the things have came down a bit.
Well, I'm sure when people ever ask you, do you miss reporting? I'm sure walking the streets of Minneapolis sometimes to cover a story with a microphone or a camera crew when you can see your breath and your developing icicles on your hair, it's not one thing you miss.
No, not at all. And as I said, I think Caroline Lowe is enjoying the Central California coast weather in the winter, too.
No, she's been a good friend of the show, too. Bernie, I appreciate your candidacy in talking about this today. And, again, a part of Minnesota history, I think, sometimes does get forgotten. I'm hoping that if people want to hear more about it, go to TCMediaNow.com, I have several videos from that week. Luckily, I had some contacts who had taped the news those nights. We have, unfortunately, Bernie, I don't have much of you from that particular week, but I do have Alan Costini, who was out there that week. I have Debbie Ely, who was out there. Don Shelby was out there. We do have some video from those reporters here in town that were out there. It's a great lesson in history, and really understand kind of what shaped our community.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Bernie, thank you. Bernie Grace, of formerly of CARE TV. Kyle, let's take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Galaxy Flight Planecraft 203, and we'll have our second guest here in the next segment on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
Quick Fire Pizza in Stillwater. Quick Fire Pizza. Three words that mean three things. Quick. You get your pizza done fast. It takes just a few minutes to cook. Fire. It's cooked in an authentic wood fire oven imported directly from Italy. Pizza. The best pizza. Freshest ingredients. Classic, specialty, or Neapolitan style. Hey, you can even build your own pizza. Quick Fire Pizza in downtown Stillwater. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Thursday till 9, Fridays and Saturdays until 10 p.m. Check them out on Facebook or go to quickfirepizza.com.
Could there be a better name? Auto Value Parts Stores. They aren't just about air fresheners or fuzzy dice. Auto Value Parts Stores are all about parts, auto parts, and advice. Pros who know auto parts with tons of tips when you need them the most. You want real value? Don't go to a place with a cute name. Go to Auto Value. Could there be a better name? I didn't think so. Your Auto Value Parts Store. We've got the parts, we've got the smarts.
Club 1220 KLBB presents the Community Calendar. The Hudson Hot Air Affair is underway this weekend. For a schedule of events, including balloon launches, fireworks, and live music, visit HudsonHotAirAffair.com. The second annual Scandia Winterfest is today. Most events are taking place at the Scandia Community Center. There will be fireworks tonight at the skating park. The Richmond NR4K preschool programs are holding informational meetings today at all seven partner sites. Visit the New Richmond Schools website for more information. Students of East Ridge High School in Woodbury perform the play Almost Maine tonight at 7 at the school's loft stage. Ticket information is available at theloftstage.org. Newport's annual Winter Family Fun Night is tonight at Lions Park Skating Rink. There will be family games, music, a bonfire, and free refreshments. And that's the community calendar.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here on KLBB. I have one more segment I want to play on the Galaxy Airlines Flight Crash 203. This was days later, and this was when the investigation was underway. And this is from Channel 11, January 24th, 1985.
Tonight continues to be the crash of Galaxy Flight 203. In Washington, the charred black box that will help piece together the cause of the crash is being examined. And in Reno, investigators are searching the airport on foot, looking for clues that may have been overlooked. Right now in Reno, National Transportation Safety Board officials are bringing the media up to date on the investigation.
No dramatic revelations are expected, but it was a busy day there for investigators. Alan Costantini is in Reno right now. Alan?
Paul and Diana, if the efforts of National Transportation Safety Board officials to find the key to the puzzle of this disaster, which claimed 68 lives, have not been apparent to Reno residents before, they are now. The Reno airport has never had the kind of inspection it got today.
The NTSB recruited more than 100 searchers from federal, state, and local agencies to make a foot-by-foot search of the path of Flight 203. The men and women were looking for bits of physical evidence, anything that could point to the actual cause of the crash. The march took over 2 hours. A dramatic, slow-motion retracing of the tragedy that cost 68 lives. Air traffic was diverted to side runways so as not to distract or endanger the operation. A little later, NTSB Chairman Burnett made a personal visit to this construction site. His interest? This 220-foot construction crane. It stands at an office building construction site just a couple of hundred yards from the impact points of the crash.
There's a possibility that, as best we can trace the flight path, that it may have come near the crane. We want to be sure that it didn't hit it. We don't have any reason to believe that it did. In fact, we don't think that it did.
The safety officials are going to every extreme to be sure that all physical evidence is gathered or observed before the crash site is cleansed of debris. And physical evidence is not the only type of evidence being investigated here, of course. There is tape recording evidence of a possible problem with the engines on that Galaxy flight. News 11's Bernie Grace says that the tape recording of a Las Vegas control tower conversation we told you about yesterday has now been released. It's a conversation between the Las Vegas control tower, a Galaxy pilot, and an Eastern Airlines pilot.
And again, that audio can be heard at tcmedianow.com. I'm going to again thank Bernie Grace for appearing on the show. Bernie was down in Nevada at Reno for 5 days during this tragedy, a major event in Minnesota history, which I would, I think it is part of our heritage, part of our culture, part of our community that we should not forget. Do we have our next guest, Kyle? Okay. Our next guest today, this is a voice that you may not know the name, but you'll know the voice. Ben Patrick Johnson is a voiceover talent in Los Angeles. Ben, are you with us?
I certainly am. I'm glad, pleased to be here.
Well, Ben, thank you so much. You know, we've been trying to get you on the show, and I realized something, which was, my fault. You are everywhere. Your voice is everywhere, so no wonder you've had a hard time coming on our show, because you've been busy lending your voice to every network and every movie that is out there.
It was a busy fall. We had it. Interesting. The way movie campaigns go, advertising campaigns go, has changed over recent years. It used to be very voiceover heavy, and you'd see tons of television commercials for movies. Lately, we've been using less voiceovers in the TV spots you're advertising new films that are opening, and fewer spots have been produced overall. But just this fall and into this winter, there's been a bit of a reversal in our business, and I ended up working on this fall and into winter, as you and I were back and forth trying to find a time for me to come on the show, on two really big campaigns. First, the film Book of Life, and then we did just a massive campaign for Night at the Museum 3, which ended up, unfortunately, not being a massive movie in terms of box office, but boy, we sold the hell out of that. We did probably 200 commercials over the period of a month or so for Night at the Museum. We did at least 100 spots for the other one. So I was working on all that in addition to my regular network stuff for Fox and CBS and Bloomberg Television and Nickelodeon. Plus, I was finishing up I also write books, and I was finishing up my latest novel, which had a November 30th deadline. So, yeah, it was. I apologize to you.
Oh, no apologies. I'm wondering when you sleep, because it sounds like you have a few things going on, and I have to full disclosure. I could not do voiceover work today because I have a little. It was 30 below here earlier in the week, or felt like it at least, and I have a little bit of that Minnesota groggle right now, which we're working through. So I'll let the audience listen to your voice.
I don't think it's just Minnesota groggle. I mean, a lot of us, people have been sick all over. I mean, it's one of the, we're just talking about major news stories, and we're listening to that, the tragic report about the airplane thing. But one of the big stories that I think didn't get much coverage this year is just how awfully sick people ended up being, both on both coasts and in the Midwest. And it's still not done, but there's been just this nasty cold that's gone around. And if that's what you've got, I'm so sorry to hear it, because you've stuck with me for weeks.
Ben, there's people I know that rarely get sick, me being one of them. I don't miss many days of work.
Yeah.
And it's, as you can tell here, my voice is my work right now. We're making through it, though. I found a cassette, and it was called Edgy Promos. So I decided to put this, and I want to play this edgy promo, and I'm using the term edgy with quotations, okay? So
okay.
Let's listen to some edgy promos here.
AM 1500, the talk station. We have Mildred on her car phone. Go ahead, Mildred.
Get out of my way, you foreign tin can!
Mildred?
I heard you're rearranging your whole schedule to make room for this big, fat, round mound of sound guy.
Oh, you mean Don Vogel.
That's the one.
Yeah, Don's going to be joining our lineup. We're going to have to rearrange just a little bit to help fit him in.
Well, I don't like change. The last time I went through change, I grew a mustache. Had to take lots of estrogen. And it's not fair what you're doing. Just because Barbara Carlson had her stomach stapled to make herself thinner doesn't mean you have to make her show thinner, for crying out loud.
Mildred, you're such a bitch. Hey, if you just listen to us, give us a little bit more of a chance. You'll find that we'll fit right into your schedule.
And what about Tori Ryder? You're going to make her show late. I bet she doesn't like being late. I bet it scared the heck out of her boyfriend.
Well, we want to scare the audience totally away, but this is edgy promo, and the cassette said produced and provided by Ben Patrick Johnson, and then we had Terry Ryder on the show. We had Terry Ryder on the show last year, and she said, "You got to talk to this Ben Patrick Johnson guy." I listened to the audio. It's like, that's the voice I know from AM 1500 KSTP.
Mm-hmm. Okay, years and years. I was the voice of KSTP for, about 20 years. I started working there when I was 20 years old. And I just, I was a fan of the station of talk radio. And I was working all over the place. I worked at Cities 97 and the long gone WLOL, which was 99.5, and we were top 40 back then. I sort of bounced around the dial there in Minneapolis, St. Paul in my late teens. And then came this opportunity to basically create a direct KSTP. And so I was very excited about that. Obviously, as I listen to that promo now, which literally I wrote and produced when I was 20 years old, I kind of cringe a little bit.
Well, I cringe a bit too, because I forgot some of the edginess, and I don't want my audience to be frightened and change a dial.
Yeah, exactly.
But
right, no, we don't want to. Yeah,
but I understand.
But, but interestingly enough, I started out. You know, I was interested in writing promos and producing stuff, and I was fascinated by movie trailers when I was younger, and then also sketch comedy. So in my writing and producing, I started incorporating more of that. And ironically, what I ended up then doing was moving out to Hollywood and becoming one of the principal voices of the movie trailers and all that. So the thing that I started mocking, I ended up doing for a living. So I don't know if that's poetic justice or irony or quite what that is, but that was how things worked for me.
Now, I'm not glad you walk away from this so quickly. You were working at top 40 stations when you're in your teens. I'm looking at your birth date here on your Wikipedia page. I'm not going to reveal it over the air. But
I'm 45 years old. I was born in 1969.
Okay, good. You do it, not me. But you were at WLOL, which was top 40 until about 1981. You're a young guy. I mean, you were doing things that many of us in this building had went to Brown Institute to try to do for years. You were doing at age 19, 20. How did that work out? Were you in the bathroom in a mirror practicing your voice? Were you doing it with in high school? How did that happen to go from being Ben a sophomore in high school to all of a sudden you're on one of the top stations in the metro?
Well, if you rewind a few years even before that, when I was a kid, like 7, 8, 9 years old, I was fascinated with media and especially radio. And my parents bought me a tape recorder, a little cassette recorder, and I went around the neighborhood interviewing people in the neighborhood about any subject I could get them to talk about, and then with them edit these interviews, pausing and unpausing the cassette recorder for those of the audience who are old enough to remember how we did it before the age of digital. And when I was like 13, 14 years old, I lied about my age just a little and managed to get into internships at McAllister College Radio and then over at the University of Minnesota radio station, KUOM, doing very exciting tasks like playing. They needed to know how long on KUOM these symphonies were. So I would play a record and literally with a stopwatch sit there and go, some of the record labels didn't have the timing written on the label. So I would sit there for 27 minutes and 30 seconds and go, oh, that symphony was 27 minutes and 30 seconds long. For those of you who are considering possibly an internship in radio at some time, those are some of the exciting tasks that one can end up doing, taking out the trash and things. But anyway, I started on air when I was about 16, and I was absolutely horrible. I mean, I was just the worst DJ you could even think of, but managed to, over the course of a few years, kind of pull it together a little bit. And I think at that point there was a fascination because I had this big voice and yet I was so green and I think kind of malleable. So in radio, the program director is the job, the position. You know this, I'm just saying this for the audience, who kind of runs the show in terms of who goes on the air when and what they say. And I had a few early champions in program directors around town who were willing to take a risk and put me on. But at one point, it's interesting because I was working at both Cities 97 doing alt-rock overnight, and then like on one weekend night, and then the next weekend night, I'd be over at WLOL, which was the big station,
Heinz and Berglund
station of the day. Yeah, exactly. Heinz and Berglund in the morning and on forward. And so it was such a cool thing because I was still just at the very end of high school, And I hadn't been the most popular kid. I went to Highland Park in St. Paul. Hadn't been the most popular kid in school. And but then to have this sort of distinguishment of being this top 40 radio DJ, which, you know, made me feel just slightly larger than life. It was cool, I gotta say. It really doesn't suck to be 19 and, you know, 20 and being on the top 40 station in town.
Well, Ben, I hope when you go to your reunions, you come back and you say, well, you may have heard, I hope you do your Taylor voice when you go in and take, you know, accept your award for most accomplished of Highland Park High School.
I don't know, most accomplished. I'm sure there are other among my class who've done tremendously well with themselves. But I certainly, you know, in terms of, I knew early on the areas I wanted to work in. I wanted to write things, and I wanted to talk on the radio and TV, and I've ended up making, you know, again, now 25 years later, I've made that my career, and I've been working consistently at it since I was an early teen. And I think I'm really extremely fortunate to have had a sense early on what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be as an adult, and was able to apply myself and just, you know, work toward that from a young age.
Our guest today is Ben Petter Johnson. Let me play some promos. So if you've not heard Ben on KSDP AM radio, which I think some of your voiceovers still float over to today, I still think some of them still linger, but I'm going to play this promo bit here. If you've not heard Ben, you have heard him. And as soon as this pops up here.
Drum roll, please.
It's a fun technology, Ben. Sometimes you...
we press the button. The button, the sound comes.
Yeah, sometimes
out.
You hit a button and then it... oh, here we go. Real player. All right.
Here we go.
Okay, well, we'll wait for that to pop on. We'll just we'll talk a little bit about some of the shows you've done. I'm looking at House, Bones, Family Guy, The Cleveland Show, Raising Hope, Alvin the Chipmunks, Gulliver's Travels, Kellogg's, Old Navy.
There's a lot. And it's interesting because when I started out in the business, you know, it was I have a deeper, sort of bigger voice, and I immediately started doing a bunch of drama. And the voices that were doing comedy were typically lighter, smilier voices. But somewhere along the way, someone thought, hey, let's use them on comedy. And comedy really has become my niche. I still do, like at CBS, I do the promos for Criminal Minds and the new show Stalker, and I've done, you know, a lot of heavy dramas over the years. But the real meat and potatoes for me is the kids and family stuff, the big franchise movie, the whole Night at the Museum series,
CBS,
Hot Train Machine, Alvin and the Chipmunks, and then, you know, I'm doing like all the Lego movie stuff, and I do a lot of voiceovers for animated stuff with Warner Brothers, you know, and I never would have picked myself as a kids and family voice, but it seems to work. Apparently, the studio people think so.
Guess what? We have the technology problem solved, so let's listen a little bit of Ben Petter Johnson.
My name is Jessica Fletcher.
In his courtroom, everyone has the right to a fair trial, but if they're proven wrong, he has the right to make them pay. Judge Joe Brown. This is Entertainment Tonight, the most watched entertainment news program in the world.
And we are right in the middle of the excitement.
'Twas the month before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, except for the mouse.
Roseanne gets the scoop on the Oscars from writer Bruce Valanche. Next Roseanne Show.
Tonight on Channel 6 News, Killer Flu.
What do doctors, lawyers, and college professors do when it's time to relax and unwind?
They watch the Rope and Bucket Hold On Tight International Rodeo Championships.
I love the intellectual voice. That's the one I like the best. the professor voice.
Thank you very much.
We you know, our,
those, I mean, that whole reel that you just played, that's, it's a few years old, but it is, you know, it just shows, as a voiceover actor, you know, you do well to be able to kind of jump all over the place. And do a variety of different inflections and reads and sort of ages. And if you can do it with some degree of believability and authenticity, then you're halfway there.
Ben, did you grow up, you were born in Tucson, but did you grow up in Minnesota?
Yeah, I grew up in St. Paul. Grew up in Highland Park, right by, my family lived right by St. Clair and Fairview. My dad taught at McAllister. And my mom taught ESL in the St. Paul Public Schools. So I'm a St. Paul boy.
So the name's Paul Stagg. Al Tighe and Ernie March. Those mean something to you, correct?
They do.
These are voices. These are names that people know their voice. I don't think they ever quite got the credit for the amount of voiceovers they did in local TV here and radio in Minneapolis, St. Paul's. They did. And the question I have for you, and I know you're very humble, and I understand that. But do you ever sometimes wish, for as much as your voice is out there, that the name Ben Patrick Johnson sometimes was more identified with your voice than it is? You're on all these great shows. We know this voice. Whether it was Judge Joe Brown or whether it's CBS or Fox or Survivor, we've heard this voice. But the name sometimes, we don't know unless you're someone like me and you do some digging and you find out who made this edgy promo.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are times, yes. The whole glory and fame, and it is appealing. It is seductive, I think, but it's also somewhat false. I have the advantage of living in Hollywood, California, and it's an advantage in this little aspect. I have friends and acquaintances who are movie stars and TV stars, and I have the opportunity to see how that affects their interactions with the world. And almost universally, it ends up being more of a negative than a positive. As you just go through your life, as you do your daily stuff, yeah, there is a certain fun thing, I think, for my friends to have people, you go outside and see them in the Starbucks or this or that. But at the end of the day, I think it gets old really quickly. And I think a lot of people that have the name recognition or the face recognition, appreciate the doors that it opens for them, but the downside is huge in that you're not allowed to just kind of live your life anymore. And coming from Minnesota and having just sort of compared to Hollywood, sort of the quieter, more humble background, it's something that we Minnesotans, I think, take for granted at times, to not have, feel like there's a flashlight, bright light shining on you all the time.
Right.
And it is disconcerting. And I think if I'd grown up in New York or grown up in Hollywood, it might not be as odd, but certainly being a Midwestern guy, I like to be able to have the anonymity and go to the supermarket and go to the Starbucks and just be mean and not have anyone really fuss much.
One thing
I don't think that's worth it.
I live in Chicago and I've been out to your neighborhood a few times. The one thing that I think that sometimes Minnesotans take for granted sometimes is we actually have a very easy way of life here. You go to Cub Foods, yeah. You go to the mall, you drive in your car, you go in and out. I was out in L.A. A few days ago, and there's nothing fast about L.A. If you go from point to point, and by the way, I think it's a great place. I think that people sometimes have a misconception of the L.A. world, but you take for granted sometimes the easiness of life, and I think that if I'm wrong, you like going able to go out to Ralph's or go out to Vons and be able to get what you want to get, and you go out and there's not a lot of trouble to do those things.
Yeah, and it's both the distance and the driving and all that, as well as just the fuss and the hubbub. A movie actress friend of mine who's not like an A-lister, but she's a recognizable face. And she was talking about going to the mall, and she said, I can't just go to the mall anymore. I have to get dressed up and do this and get my makeup and hair right and be ready to be presentable in some fancy way so that when people see me and approach me in the mall, I have to be on my mark in my P's and Q's, and I have to be ready to be getting feeling lovely to everyone. Anytime you step out your door when you have the celebrity thing, you're on, and you have to be on. You're not allowed to just wear your bathrobe and sweats.
Ben, the music's playing. Unfortunately, we have to edit here, but I hope we can do it again sometime, do part two. This has been a great conversation. Ben Patrick Johnson, if you've not seen him, you've heard him. And go to Ben, do you have a website?
You go to benpatrickjohnson.com. You can follow me on Twitter at benpatrick90069.
Ben Patrick Johnson, thank you so much. This is Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. We'll be back next week here on 1220.